In the next few years, Australia's death rate is going to start rising fast as more than 5 million baby boomers approach a statistical cliff. What began as a baby boom after the Second World War is about to end with a 20-year boom for the funeral industry. The wave of deaths is going to sweep away many of the traditions we have about death and dying. Hello, I'm Ian Townsend, and welcome to Background Briefing. A few weeks ago, Evelyn Green was buried in the bush on the New South Wales north coast.
Well, what do you reckon, Jono?
Yeah, it's good spot.
It was a wonderful idea to go with this time.
Yes.
And the more we are heading into bad financial times, the better this is for people, the idea that they can do something different.
Yeah.
It's been happy in the environment. Yeah. It is a wonderful, wonderful. And the way we're handling this is the way we wanted to do it.
Hands on.
Yeah.
Family managed.
Yes. Yeah. And I like this idea. It's freedom, your family.
No.
You know, and you can grieve.
It's a sunny winter's day in the hills behind Lismore. Her family has invited me to this funeral. They've chosen a grave in the long grass beneath a big gum tree, and John Gough has made a simple pine board coffin for his mother-in-law.
It's the first bit of carpentry I've done for years, so I really enjoyed doing it again. Of course, I was a bit worried to get the length of the body and feel like pulling out a tape and that. That's not the time to do all of that stuff.
That's right, going
so down, I got the minimum sizes so the boys could know what they were up to. And it's worked out well. And there's nothing galvanised, no plastic, no nothing in it. It will just rot away, I suppose you could say, like with earth.
Yeah. I can hear your
bagpipe. Oh, here it comes. Piper.
Goodness. Yeah.
There'll be no headstone on this grave. Instead, the coffin will be buried with a magnet, so the grave can be found later with a metal detector. The grave's coordinates will be recorded, and if you want to visit, you'll be able to find it with a GPS.
Hello. This is my sister-in-law.
I'm Ian.
Nice to meet you. Hi, Ian.
Claudia.
I'm very pleased with it. Pleased with the way it looks.
It all seems a very New Age, northern New South Wales thing to do, but Evelyn Green was from a traditional farming family. She died at a nursing home in Ballina at the age of 97. This is the first burial in a bushland cemetery set aside by Lismore Council for what's called natural earth burials. It's something that's taken off in the past 10 years in England, where a survey recently found that 35% of people now wanted to be buried in one of the dozens of natural woodland burial grounds scattered around the UK. The idea is to turn your body into compost as food for trees. At the moment in Australia, the baby boomers are still organising the cremation and traditional burial of their parents. But when they start making arrangements for their own funerals, it'll be a different story. Funeral directors such as Phil Connolly on Queensland's Gold Coast say the industry's getting ready for not just a big increase in business, but demands for more choice.
Well, there's a lot of smart people out there in business, and some of the smarter people bought out a large number of funeral companies. They know that baby boomers are coming.
What is coming and when?
Oh, it's definitely. You see it in tourism now. Tourism operators are very focused on baby boomers, caravan parks, caravan sales, recreational vehicles, boats. You know, people are collecting their superannuation, and I suppose nursing homes will boom after that, and then we'll notice it by then. But it's actually documented when and how it's going to happen.
When?
Well, I'm one of those. I'm in the early baby boomers, and I'm 61. A lot of people start dying around about now.
Australia's death rate at the moment has never been lower. But the first baby boomers are reaching an age when cancer, heart disease and strokes do begin taking a toll. If you look at the statistics, the chances of dying start to rise rapidly after we reach the age of 67. The first of Australia's 5.5 million baby boomers hit that age in 4 years' time. At some point in the next two decades, deaths will probably outnumber births in this country. The Australian Cemeteries and Crematoria Association is getting its members ready for this. Its chief executive is Darryl Thomas.
The industry, as it stands at the moment, is very, very capable of handling the increase in deaths that is going to occur. So the industry itself doesn't have to change a lot. But obviously, cemeteries are going to fill up a little bit quicker, and management of cemeteries is going to have to look forward to developing more land.
This is one of the big problems. Of every 10 Australians who die today, 7 will be cremated, but 3 still want to be buried, and there's hardly any more space left in the big city cemeteries near where most of the baby boomers live. The biggest cemetery in Adelaide is Centennial Park. When I arrive, there's a man at the counter asking how much more room there is in the family grave. He's being told there's room for 4. Centennial Park's considered a modern cemetery. Since 1936, it's buried 80,000 people and cremated 138,000. Most of them are still here, under 40 hectares of lawn and roses in the Adelaide suburbs. Centennial Park solves the problem of space by limiting the tenure of its graves. Instead of buying a grave, you buy a licence for 50 years. Your family can renew it, but if you live and die in South Australia, or Western Australia for that matter, resting in peace isn't guaranteed. In many cemeteries, there's a good chance you can be dug up again in a process the industry calls lift and deepen. The chief executive of Adelaide Centennial Park Cemetery is Brian Elliott.
That means in the case of a burial, skeletal remains, as operators we excavate down to those remains, we gather them up and place them into a smaller ossuary box, which is about, in the old terms, about 2 foot long by a foot deep. And those remains are buried further into the grave, which allows for a new burial to take place at the original position to a new family. That way, cemeteries of this nature are available to the community, close to the community. And that is a problem that I know a lot of cities are grappling with.
Like it or not, this practice will probably be adopted to some degree by all big city cemeteries across the country in the future.
On the eastern seaboard, where perpetuity, that is you buy a licence and it's forever, is causing challenges. New cemeteries are having to be established further and further out from the city, which they have to compete against developers for housing, etc. So the more and more that happens, the dearer and dearer it's going to be for burial. Hence, in some regards, options such as cremation are going to become more popular, potentially, because of cost.
Cremation's taken 100 years to become the preferred way we dispose of bodies. The first crematorium in the Southern Hemisphere opened in Adelaide in 1903, and in its first year, it had only 12 customers. The idea horrified most Australians at the time, but it's now routine. Brian Elliott.
What you see over there is the traditional memorial that people do expect to see. It's the old-style cremation memorials with rose setting and rose bushes with a garden surround and things of that nature. But then you come into this area where you can probably hear water flowing.
Centennial Park is a cemetery, but its biggest business today is cremation. It has 3 cremators running almost around the clock, cremating 10 people a day, every day of the year. Some of the prime spots here have been reserved for ashes. Cemeteries make money from selling memorials, as well as graves. Centennial Park recently built a pond and put an island in the middle. It's leafy and quiet.
It proved popular. Families were actually watching it being built and said, we want to organise a position in there. It is only for cremated remains, but it is visually quite stunning.
How much would it cost then?
It really depends on the circumstance. We do have positions here for up to $6,000 or more.
And this is for the ashes to be placed here.
Correct.
With the memorial?
Correct. And that's for 30 years.
What would happen after the 30 years if nobody paid for the extension?
Well, we hope that doesn't occur, because part of our process is we are working towards maintaining ongoing contact with the families on a 5-year basis and give them the options to extend. But if they don't, then ultimately the control of the position does return back to Centennial Park, the remains would be recovered. They would be placed in what we call an unmarked location within the cemetery, and the position would be relicensed to a new family.
Centennial Park Cemetery in Adelaide last year made a small profit for the three councils who own it, but it really has to stash money away for the day when it runs out of room. Like a lot of council cemeteries, its life as a graveyard is limited, but maintaining the graves will be eternal. When it was established in 1936, it was cutting edge in cemetery design. No headstone is higher than a metre. All headstones are set on concrete beams, so the grass on the graves can be mowed. And because of its licence system, it will be a long time before it's full. When you wander around today, you see blue stickers, a bit like parking tickets, on the headstones of licensees whose time has expired. This position is now due for renewal, they say. Please contact the office. If a family doesn't contact the office within 2 years, the site can be reused. The headstone is photographed, removed from the cemetery, and broken up. If you want to be left in peace, you really need to head out of the city. Driving south from Adelaide is funeral director Kevin Hartley.
We're travelling south in Adelaide, about 40 kilometres to a little town, a historic town called Aldinga, which was a heck of a long way from the city when it was first established, but the southern suburbs are growing in that direction.
We're heading to a site that he's hoping will be the first of a new sort of city cemetery, a natural earth burial ground where a tree will be planted beside each new grave.
There's a piece of land that's owned by the state government which is just north of the original Aldinga township, and the area has been vacant for years. It's been talked about as being a buffer zone between the suburbs and the township.
Kevin Hartley's been in the funeral business for 25 years, and earlier this year he started White Knight Funerals. He's been burying people in biodegradable shrouds since January. A few months ago, he was on the ABC television program The New Inventors with a coffin he invented called the Transporter. Most state laws say you have to be taken to your grave in a coffin, but they don't say you have to be buried in one. Kevin Hartley's exploiting this loophole.
Took, in fact, one of these bizarre, elaborate American coffins, which I've got to say look fantastic, but they're made out of sheet metal, heavier than the average motor car, and we modified that so it has a trapdoor device in the bottom through which, at the end of the service, the body slowly lowers under gravity on a lowering device, and over a period of a minute ends up at rest in the bottom of the grave in a hurry to get to the cemetery. Sorry, what were you asking me there? I got distracted.
No, the transporter, the body's lowered into the grave. That seems to satisfy a lot of people's, I suppose, ideas of what should happen.
Look, it meets all the legal criteria for a start, but what I discovered when we first did this was the difference. And the difference is that these funerals feel different to any funeral I've ever been to because there's zero pretense and there's zero facade. What you're seeing is what you're getting. And I've said to you, I think that the funeral industry is a bit of a facade. It's all just show for the day. Whereas when you get to the end of a funeral and you're standing around that grave and you look down and there's a shrouded body there that you know is there, you know that's the relative. And as a lady said to me just very recently at a funeral, she went to say goodbye to her sister and she said, and I really can say goodbye because she's just there, I know it.
The site we're driving to is Kevin Hartley's dream cemetery. There are a couple of cemeteries around the country that do offer bushland burials in shrouds or eco-coffins, such as the Lismore Bushland Cemetery and the Kingston Cemetery in Tasmania, but there's nothing on the scale of what Kevin Hartley's planning. We're approaching a bare, windswept hill on the edge of Adelaide, which he hopes one day will be a forest fertilised by the remains of nearly 30,000 people.
But when you think about it, if you bury a body in a medium-depth grave, not shallow, not 6 foot in the ground necessarily, you're burying it at a point where it will actually decompose naturally. Quite the contrary. If you put a body in a plastic-lined box where the decomposition naturally is limited by the barrier of the plastic, what in fact you get is, and it's a terrible term, it's putrefaction, it's rotting. Because not only is it sealed in a box, but at a six-foot depth, you're down through the zone where you're into an anaerobic area. So you've got a situation, I would suspect, that from a health point of view or a bacteria point of view, you'd actually have a much worse problem sealed away in that six-foot-down plastic-lined one-room apartment under the ground than you ever would by returning that body directly into the ground where it could decompose naturally. We've arrived. A few pine trees have been planted down the middle there for a windbreak, because as soon as they knocked all the trees down, they realised all the wind would blow the soil away. So here we stand.
Here, on this hill, there'll be nothing but a tree to mark each grave, and we're left to imagine nearly 30,000 people lying beneath us.
We can bury that way, we can bury that way, and it goes on all the way down to that road. It's about 28.5 hectares here, at approximately 1,000 burials per hectare. You're talking about 28,500 interments, and all of those interments would be permanent, and by the time it's all done, what you'd have here would be the most beautiful natural piece of shrub and bush, not unlike what you see behind you.
Kevin Hartley's been thinking about it since Christmas 2 years ago.
That Christmas, when I was asked this question, what are you going to do with yourself when you die, Kevin? The choice of a natural earth burial was an emotional one for me, because I've run a crematorium. Without going into details, I'd never be cremated. It's just unpleasant. It's violent. It's unnecessary. And I hate the idea of being buried in a box. I've seen the results and looked at the insides of coffins and thought, wow, why would you put a person inside a plastic-lined box? They're not going to decompose. So I've got the idea of a natural earth burial via an emotional route. But once I get there, I then see the environmental benefit of it.
Presumably you were in a reasonably lucrative part of the industry where you had a crematorium. Why did you decide then to move over? Was it all emotional, or is there a real niche here that you can make money out of?
I could make a fair living out of this. This is a business. I've got to make a profit. I've got to pay people, pay the rent, make enough to eat food. The profit's got to be fair, though. I know in some niches of the market it's possible to make $5,000, $6,000, $8,000, $10,000 straight profit on the sale of an elaborate coffin. That just simply doesn't wear well with me personally.
Kevin Hartley. We're all being bombarded with messages to save energy and water, reduce carbon and recycle. It's a message that Centennial Park Cemetery, back in the Adelaide suburbs, is taking so seriously that it commissioned a study earlier this year to see how big a carbon footprint is left by death. Brian Elliott.
I can say that on the day of a cremation here at Centennial Park, a cremation generates 160 kilos of CO2. On the day of a burial, we generate 39 kilos of CO2. So on the day, the CO2 emissions are one quarter for a burial. Over the long term of the license for a burial, the environmental impact of a burial is in actual fact higher long-term than a cremation, and that is because of the maintenance factor in a cemetery like Centennial Park, where we mow and go back over the 50 years of the licence, and all of that labour cost, etc., has got an environmental footprint as well.
But this study also has shown that natural earth burial is a bit more carbon-friendly, and that's something you can sell. If you have a cemetery that's just bush, that you don't need to mow, where burial's cheap and carbon can be offset by planting trees, then it might even be possible to make money, or at least avoid an everlasting cost for mowing the lawn and watering the roses. Centennial Park's already looking at sites in the Adelaide Hills for its own natural earth burial ground.
There's a few challenges, a few question marks. What happens if there's a bushfire and all the trees burn down? What do we do then? So there's all of those sort of questions that, you know, we have to address as part of all of that, but we're looking at those sort of things as part of accommodating those different choices and the different awareness that the generations now have.
Most Australians choose cremation. In Queensland, 9 out of 10 funerals end with cremation, and burials become almost a curiosity. It might be because many of the 1,000 people who move to Queensland every week are retirees. Just over 1 million baby boomers live in Queensland, and two-thirds of them live between the Sunshine and Gold Coasts. One of the biggest industries on this coastal strip is retirement housing. Another is funerals.
Hi there, it's Ian Townsend.
G'day. New Haven Funerals is owned by Phil Connolly, who over 30 years has seen some dramatic changes in what people want when they die. He says it isn't the baby boomers who've been embracing cremation, but their parents.
They'd probably experienced a lot of grief and a lot of death during the Second World War, and that's when cremation really came into its own, you know, when those people started to pass away. So I don't think you can blame the baby boomers for that. Anything else, but not that.
He's taking me on a tour, starting in the chapel upstairs.
Okay, when the funeral service is over, we're at the very near the end. The minister who's standing up here just pushes a button and just slowly goes down.
Could you push the button? Is that possible?
Yeah. How about you pushing the button? Have you ever done that?
No. I've cut the umbilical cord of my babies, but I haven't been at the other end.
Yeah.
The body's lowered to the mortuary downstairs.
Oh, at the moment, there's three in the waiting room, you might say. They've had their funeral service and this cremator here is almost finished. This one is finished and this one here is finished as well. So by another 2 hours, there won't be any in there. But in the meantime, there's no hearses there. So they'll be coming back from funeral services with other coffins, which will then go into the cremation.
What powers them?
This is gas, LPG gas. There's a big tanks outside that just comes in. I'll show you in here. You have a look how clean that is. You know, there's nothing else in there. See, they're all bone chips, and you see they're still red hot. So that one's only just been finished. So.
Around 100,000 bodies are cremated in Australia every year. We've become used to cremation. It all seemed quite practical and even environmentally sound. But now that we're prepared to put a price on carbon, it might not be so cheap.
I've just been to a conference in America and it was almost dominated by presenters who made presentations that were all leaning and slanted towards eco. One of those presenters was a cremator manufacturer who's invented a gadget that for $10,000 you can put on every cremator and it creates a lesser of a carbon footprint, because although the cremation process really doesn't do a lot of harm to the environment, it does some. And if you can be seen to be doing less, well, people perhaps would like you more. And more people are getting into the green environment, so to speak.
In fact, Phil Connolly has just changed the name of his crematoriums to promote a greener image.
We've just changed the name of both our crematoriums to Eco Memorial Park for that very reason. We're offering now to plant a shrub or a bush or a seed of some kind for every single cremation that we do here.
And as well as a green funeral, people are beginning to demand a bigger celebration when they die.
I'm still young, but I know my days are numbered. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and so on. But a time will come when these numbers have all ended, and all I've ever seen will be forgotten. Won't you come to my funeral when my days are done? Life's not long, so I hope when I am finally dead and gone, you gather round when I am lowered into the ground.
The Crash Test Dummies and their song At My Funeral. The big funerals that were popular in the Victorian era started to vanish after the First World War, but they're now coming back. Brisbane's largest and oldest cemetery is at Toowong. It's a sprawling cemetery on a series of hills now surrounded by suburbs. It's owned and maintained by Brisbane City Council, but it has, like many old cemeteries, an enthusiastic group of volunteers that try to preserve the surprising amount of history here. Hilda McLean is a member of the Friends of the Toowong Cemetery, and she's just returned from England, where she's been studying how cemeteries over there are being used.
A lot of funeral directors are getting their horses back and their horses and the hearses. A lot of people actually want to go out with the big Victorian era funeral. And in the London East End, where the traditions were the last to die, they're sort of back with a vengeance. However, so they're now having the big Victorian era funeral, but the commitments are still ending with a cremation in most cases because of the lack of affordable burial space anywhere within the home counties. In Australia, children used to be involved in funerals up to about World War I. Then it was just too much death, sadness and mourning, etc. The children used to be the pallbearers in Victorian era funerals. Now, the pall was the cloth that covered the coffin, not the coffin itself. Because you had coffin bearers and you had pallbearers, but these days we tend to use the word pallbearer when we actually mean a coffin bearer. And then children just disappeared from funerals. But nowadays, children are considered to be a vital part of a funeral service, and they participate.
So that's come back?
That's come back. Most people think it's something new, but there's very little new under the sun.
There's not that much space left at the Toowong Cemetery, but the council has started selling plots in the narrow horse and cart tracks that run between the various sections of this old cemetery.
Yes, somewhere about here.
Hilda McLean's showing me around.
In the 1970s, the City Council administration under Clem Jones at the time decided to, they wanted to make a large area, the front of the area cemetery, more park-like. So they wrote to hundreds, we've got files of grave owners saying that, indicating that their grave site was unsightly and they didn't hear back or if the family didn't make some sort of restitution, the grave would be demolished. Mushrooms!
This is part of the perk of walking around the graveyard.
Yes. So, mushrooms, guavas. Though the guavas are a bit controversial. There's some people who actually love their guavas so they can make guava jam or jelly out of them, and to the rest of us they're a complete nuisance because they grow in the graves and cause damage. We also have a mango tree that gives a good crop every couple of years or so, which makes excellent chutney, I might add.
Dingoes are sometimes seen wandering through this cemetery. There are camellias here that were planted a century ago, and also rare native grasses. Unlike South Australia, in Queensland these graves are perpetual leases, so burial here is forever at the moment. The local council can still change its mind. The families still technically own the graves, and so anything growing on top of the grave itself is their responsibility. Many graves are neglected, and so trees growing in the grave are pushing over headstones, and forests have sprouted in the older sections. If you have a family member buried here and there's room, you can be buried here with them. But because most people have been opting for cremation, that space remains unused. Hilda McLean.
Up through here. Well, I did a paper for one of the genealogical societies not so long ago, Cremation, the Disappearing Dead. And cremation is fine. It's the memorialisation which is the issue. We've had a young lady who's come into the office who was mad. Oh, she was so upset that her grandparents, who died before she was born, had been cremated and ashes are cast to the four winds or a beach or something somewhere. And so she said, I've got nowhere to come. She was most annoyed about that.
While you can still be buried here, city cemeteries like this have gained a new lease on life through tourism.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I have your attention, please? Can I just have you line up in a single line along this brick wall here for me, please?
That night, I took one of the ghost tours that had become popular in old cemeteries around the country.
If you all have your tickets.
The Toowong Cemetery ghost tours have been running for years, and on this cold, wet Saturday night, 30 people have turned up with torches to wander about in the dark.
Good evening, sir. Come to us, angel, we know what you are. Come to us, angel, we know what you are. Come to us, angel, we know what you are, dear messenger of death.
If this was to happen, ladies and gentlemen, not just the bats would scream, but the trees would start to shake as well. As the breeze picks up in this area, these trees here, to your left and right here, would start to move, and the other trees do not. And as it comes closer and it appears, these trees start to shake violently, but they don't seem to be moving whatsoever, well, except for wildlife, of course, which is excellent. Couldn't have asked for a better timing.
It's all good fun, with a bit of history thrown in. We've walked to the top of a hill, and our guide's telling us that up here, 100 years ago, people would pay the equivalent of $1 million for a grave with a view.
As I said, it's a Victorian-era cemetery, and people would choose to be buried up high because they believed, most people here were Catholics at the time, they believed that on Judgment Day, that those closer to heaven would come out of the ground first, would resurrect first, and would ascend to heaven first, and be closer to the right hand of God. And they would pay vast sums of money, ladies and gentlemen, to be buried on high, consecrated ground, such as this one. Down there, equivalent of $3,000. Up there, equivalent of $1 million. I wish to be mulched or fed on by people who killed me. That's my choice, ladies and gentlemen. And now, I think we should move on. Gatekeeper. Torches on, follow me.
It's this desire for choice, whether you want to be fed on by vampires or worms, that's going to set the tone of funerals in the future. At the moment, the choices that the funeral industry offers don't suit everyone, although they're changing. There's a lot more choice if you're willing to read the laws and do the paperwork yourself. Melbourne barrister and author Robert Larkins says you can arrange a funeral without going to a funeral director.
Firstly, it's amazing how much control we have. I mean, if someone dies at home, you can keep the body at home and you can build your own coffin. It's not a problem. You can take the body to the cemetery in the back of a four-wheel drive. It's just that people aren't aware of it. So I think awareness is the first thing. And there's been a recent parliamentary inquiry in both New South Wales and Victoria, and both those inquiries made it fairly clear that they didn't want to impose legislation that stopped those sorts of freedoms about people looking after a burial themselves. So there are surprisingly few legislative stumbling blocks. There are some anomalies, like the notion of having to be buried in a coffin, but most of the legislation says things like the body has to be taken to the cemetery in the coffin and transported around the cemetery in a coffin, but often there's a loophole. This was the one the Muslims used. It didn't actually say it had to be put in the ground in a coffin.
The Muslims want their dead to be buried the same day and wrapped in a simple shroud. Australian laws have made that difficult, but the community's found a way around it. They take the body in a coffin to its grave. The body's put into the grave and the coffin's taken away. The Jewish community also wants a fast burial. And these communities have set up their own businesses to handle their dead. Robert Larkins.
And they have kept control, but mainstream Australian community has lost control, really. And we're doing things like having bodies embalmed without even knowing why we're doing it. We're buying expensive coffins, often out of guilt, whereas our values might suggest that we should be preserving wood. We're putting coffins and having them cremated. The coffin only might have a working life of 12 hours or so. And a lot of these issues, people are just thinking about, well, why am I doing this? Why am I having a heavy stone memorialisation? Granite that's mined in China, probably scarring the countryside there and being shipped over here at great expense because it weighs so much. The grave has to have concrete foundations. Is this an appropriate way to have our final act of love and the way we actually want to leave the planet?
Until the 1990s, most Australian funeral companies were small and family-owned. Then some large US corporations started buying them up and introducing add-ons to funeral services that we weren't used to in Australia, things like embalming and viewings. Adelaide funeral director Kevin Hartley has worked for some of these large funeral chains.
And I think in Australia, over the last 20 years, we've got what's being imported as the American way of death. I don't want to be litigious or sound like I'm bagging, but the cost of funerals in Australia has gone up, where with large companies who've now bought purchased, you know, many crematoriums and acquired numerous large funeral businesses, and they make more and more profit by rationalising the work into single mega mortuaries. That should or could be reflected in a drop in funeral costs in Australia, but the reality is the cost of funerals is going up relative to it, and the numbers of embalmings is going up. Embalming is becoming natural course. Viewings, elaborate viewings, are becoming sold because that's the American style.
There are some very good reasons for embalming if a body has to be sent interstate or overseas. But for preserving a body for the few days it takes to arrange a funeral, refrigeration's usually all that's needed. The trouble with embalming is that burned or buried, the chemicals are polluting. The toxic formaldehyde that's still used here has been banned in Europe. It used to be common for people, when they died at home, to be left in a bed or in a front room, and the family would hold a vigil until the funeral was organised. It was practical then, because the people who made the coffins would undertake to collect the body and bury it, and so there was a day or two, or even three, between a death and a funeral. The body wasn't embalmed, but that wasn't a problem if it was only for a day or so. That tradition's gone, to be replaced by viewings at a funeral home. While there are also good reasons for some people to view a body at a funeral home, Kevin Hartley says in many cases it's really not necessary.
So much better to see that person in a familiar surrounding, like in a bed, than to see them presented, painted up, pumped full of chemicals and put into an austere coffin. I mean, I've had people say that to me, where I've met people after funerals, and one gentleman always stuck in my mind, this was years and years ago, I ran into him some months after the funeral. Obviously the funeral came up in the conversation, it was his mother's funeral, and he just said, I wish I'd never had that viewing. I said, oh, why is that? He said, because it's the image that's in my mind, it's the last picture, I can see her in that damn coffin. His exact words, and I've been mindful of that ever since.
For centuries, the English and European tradition has been burial. The Catholic Church resisted cremation until the 1960s, when theologians decided that cremation wouldn't stop God resurrecting a body on Judgment Day. Graveyards served other purposes as well. Here's Professor Roger Short from Melbourne University with a line from a poem written by Thomas Gray in the 19th century called Elegy Written in a Country Churchyard.
Beneath the yew tree's shade, in many a mouldering heap, the rude forefathers of this hamlet sleep. And I often wondered why yew trees were the tree that you found in British churchyards. Yew is extremely toxic to cattle and sheep, and yews were absolutely vital for making the longbows that were the secret weapon of the British. I mean, we wouldn't have won these major battles in France if we hadn't had the good old English longbow. So we needed to plant lots of yew trees. And where could you plant them where they would be fenced off from cattle and sheep? And the obvious place was in churchyards.
Professor Roger Short started out as a reproductive biologist, and he's since gained a reputation for his studies of population control. He's now taking an interest in what happens at the end of life and has become a convert to the idea of a natural earth burial.
3 years ago, I had decided that I was definitely going to be cremated and my ashes were going to be sprinkled from the highest mountain in the Inner Hebrides, a mountain called Hallowell, in a southwesterly gale, so that my ashes would be sprinkled over the rest of Scotland. And that made me feel really good. And now I realise that it was just infantile, childish and idiotic. No way would I make my last emission 150 kilograms of CO2 to contaminate the world. The best thing to do with your body when you've died is to commit it back to the earth. And if you could plant some trees around your corpse, your perfect blood and bone meal, and you could generate a memorial forest, because we've done some calculations which show that one tree will sequester from the atmosphere 1 ton of carbon dioxide every 100 years of its life.
Worries about the environmental impact of disposing of all these dead people, whether buried or burned, is starting to test cemeteries and crematoria around the world. Kevin Hartley in Adelaide says he thinks it's curtains for cremation.
When you think about it, this amuses me. I don't know if it amuses anyone else, but it's cheaper to cremate a body than it is to bury it. And you think about that. You've got to put it in a coffin. You've got to take it to a specially built crematorium where they've got a furnace or number of furnaces worth maybe up to $250,000 each. We've got to pump fossil fuel into the furnace to raise it up to about 800 degrees C. You've got to have staff who are trained to do this. You've actually got to put the body through an industrial process in specialised fashion, deal with the ashes, and all of that costs less than to simply dig a hole and pop a person in it. That doesn't really seem sane. And when I began...
Well, you've seen the figures. What's going on here?
Well, it's simple in this case. I tried to work this out when that thought came to me. Why is it cheaper to be cremated? And the simple answer is it's being subsidised. It's being subsidised by cheap fossil fuel and by the environment.
Already in Europe, crematoria are being ordered to put filters called wet scrubbers on their chimneys to capture some of the carbon before it gets into the atmosphere. They can cost up to $1 million each, so cremation in Europe will simply cost more. The attraction of cremation has been that it's cheaper than traditional burials. If the price goes up, people might not buy it. So funeral directors are looking for something that's as convenient as cremation and as cheap. So far, two methods are being considered, both macabre. In one, the body's snap frozen in nitrogen and then shattered with sound waves, freeze-dried and turned into dust. It's like cremation without burning. The other method involves dissolving bodies in an alkaline solution, breaking them down into a calcium dust, which you can keep or scatter, and a liquid. It's been suggested that the 300 litres of liquid left over from the process be used as fertiliser. On Queensland's Gold Coast, Phil Connolly has a patent on a new technique he's developed with a scientist.
I can't tell you too much about it because it's subject to a patent and the process, but it will be a mixture between cremation and burial in that the final product will be able to be used as perhaps irrigation or be put back into the ecology and do some good. And the process is not a fire or anything, it's just a natural reduction. But it really just speeds up the composting process to about 12 hours instead of 6 months.
A lot of things are possible, but it's persuading people that this process is right for them, or at least getting people used to the idea and even talking about death and decomposition and composting.
You know, I've owned crematoriums now for 20 or 25 years. I can't talk my mother into it. So it's just a cultural thing. We'll get used to the new ideas just as we got used to cremation. 100 years ago, if you said to somebody, when you die, we're going to put you in a box, then we're going to put you in this little concrete square of bricks here and we're going to set fire to you, you wouldn't have anybody. It's just getting used to the idea.
The other problem is how the law might apply to any new technique. Each Australian state has its own laws that deal with the disposal of bodies. They don't match, so trying to transfer bodies interstate, for instance, usually requires twice as much paperwork. And when the funeral industry recently took a look at how it would cope with a deadly human pandemic of bird flu, it found that the industry had the capacity to handle a disaster, but it would be the paperwork that would slow things down. The law allows a lot of choice, but the paperwork often puts people off. You can be buried at sea. Lots of people think that's a good idea. But the red tape is a nightmare, and there are only 4 or 5 burials at sea in Australia each year. You can also be buried on private property. Again, there are a lot of rules, but Robert Larkin says it's certainly a cheaper option.
I think in northern New South Wales, where more and more people seem to be getting buried on private land, that's another example. We should never forget that Kerry Packer was buried on private land. It was good enough for him, it might be good enough for a lot of other people.
How much would it cost him?
Kerry Packer's funeral cost virtually nothing. It cost next to nothing to bury on private land. Had a very small service, and of course there was a larger one at the Opera House, but the state funded that, so Kerry Packer probably had one of the cheapest funerals in Australia.
It's the baby boomers who are going to want more private property burials and burials at sea and natural earth burials. When it's their funeral, the choices they make will become the funeral traditions for the future.
And I think once the general awareness rises, I'm not for a moment suggesting funeral directors will ever go out of existence, and I think they play a very important role, and I wouldn't want to be seen to be criticising them. I think as the baby boomers who have passed throughout their lives, whether it be the sexual revolution or the home birth movement that grew there for a while, I think it'll be this generation, as we start facing death, the ones who are likely to want to take that control and start looking for alternatives.
The baby boomers are already making their presence felt in cemeteries. Hilda McLean from the Toowong Cemetery.
So a lot of the baby boomers who are actually buying the plots here now in anticipation of their demise, and they're the ones which are going for some of the new alternate memorialisations, sort of non-traditional materials, non-traditional shape kind of thing, more reflective of them as individuals. And of course funeral services are becoming very individualist as well. There's still a lot of churches in the UK that will refuse to play anything by Frank Sinatra in the church itself. I know of at least one Lutheran pastor here in Queensland who will not permit anything but the liturgy in the funeral itself. If they want to do my way, they have to do it their way, way away, kind of thing was his take on it. Yeah, so it's definitely more about me.
Back in Lismore, Evelyn Green has been buried in a simple ceremony under a tree in a new section of the Lismore Cemetery set aside for natural earth burials. She was in her 90s when she died. How lucky to have lived such a long and full life through the remarkable 20th century and raised a family. Her son-in-law, John Gough, says her funeral in a simple coffin in the bush made a lot of people happy.
The old people... That's why we're going to put this... We're taking a picture and we'll put it in the local paper so that they'll get copies down there, and her friends that were asking so much about her and so sorry to see her deceased will see what sort of a funeral she's going to have. And it could influence some of them. You never know.
Around the world, what to do with the billion people who'll be dying in the next 20 years... is going to test the funeral traditions of all countries. As cemetery manager Brian Elliott says, the sheer weight of numbers is going to force change whether we like it or not.
If we keep going the way we are, we will basically cover the world with cemeteries if we keep burying. We have to do things differently if we are to not litter the world, if you like, with cemeteries as dumping grounds. That's a very harsh statement, I know, but we have to be very practical.
Background Briefing's coordinating producer is Linda McGuinness. Research by Anna Whitfeld. Technical production this week is by Timothy Nicastri. The executive producer is Kirsten Garrett. I'm Ian Townsend, and you're listening to Background Briefing on ABC Radio National.